Previously on Research Rank Repeat.
He was also, like, kind of creepy. Like, he left a note, and it was like, you forgot something. But it, like, yeah. In my head, I heard it as, like, Liam Neeson, like, good luck. Like, I heard it, like, as, like, a murderer. Thought it was weird they called it friendship, because it definitely was more than friendship.
Friendship, in quotes.
Definitely was a relationship.
What a wild movie. I forgot I also should mention that this was intended to be Hayao Miyazaki's retirement from filmmaking.
Yes.
And a lot of people mentioned that it seemed like, it felt like a retirement film. Like, right. It felt like he was taking a bow.
He said, you thought.
And he said, guess what, bitch?
Psych.
I'm back.
It's a little too long. And it's a little messy in the middle. I think the plot drags a little bit in the middle of the movie. But my God, if this isn't some of like the best animation I've ever seen in my life.
The music was really good. The animation was really good. The ending was unexpected and not how endings usually go, which was kind of a nice twist. Scenes where they held hands.
Yeah, they danced together.
I've never held Ruth's hand like that before. Never. I'm just saying. The animation, Alyssa said it looked like Jimmy Neutron animation.
It looks like Jimmy Neutron, yeah. It was rough. It's 2023, baby. Yeah. We got a 2D animated film coming out.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine if this had been their actual last film?
Yeah. Insane. Like, if Cars 2 was the last film Pixar ever put out, like, that's sour. We have finally caught up. We've watched 23 movies. Hannah, how do you live?
1 mile at a time.
Welcome. This is Research Rank Repeat. I'm your co-host, Alyssa.
This is co-host Hannah.
And today we have a very special episode. It's finally the end of our Ghibli movie ranking. We made it, Hannah. We did it.
We did.
We finally saw every film the studio has to offer. For the most part, we excluded one that they did in partnership with another studio, but that's not important. We're not here to talk about that today. What we're here to talk about is the newest film from the studio, The Boy and the Heron. But previously, also, originally was known as How Do You Live? That's why I asked you, How Do You Live, Hannah?
Ah.
Yeah, that was...
I went the Vin Diesel Fast and Furious route. I think I messed up the line, too.
Yeah, I think you did. Quarter mile at a time, yeah. How dare you besmirch the family this way, Hannah. But yeah, that was the original. I think that's like the literal translation of the Japanese title is How Do You Live, which is also the name of a book, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hannah, we went to those theaters.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. It's been a bit since we've gone for a podcast.
Yeah, I think... Fast and the Furious? Dare I say?
Yeah.
Or was it Elemental? It might have been Elemental.
Hmm.
I think Elemental was later.
Yeah. I think it was. Yeah. It's been about six months.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to see the movies in theaters because I feel like when we went, the first movie we had seen since COVID was Fast and the Furious 9.
Yeah, it was 9, yeah.
And I think we both, like, maybe overhyped the movie because of that, because it was just like being in theaters is a different experience.
For sure.
And we've never seen a Studio Ghibli movie in theaters.
No. Until this one. It's interesting because they didn't really do theatrical releases of
or they did limited
earlier movies, and they did some limited, and they kind of did, I feel like Secret World of Arrietty was probably the largest US release that we had previously got before now.
Right.
Because we had multiple theaters in our state that offered this film multiple times.
Yeah.
And there was a pretty decent number of people in the theater we went to.
Yeah.
It wasn't full by any means.
We went the weekend after it came out, like the following weekend. And yeah, it was pretty, I mean, it was at least halfway filled, maybe three quarters.
We are currently recording this on the 19th. The film came out on the 8th. 8th or 9th, I believe, was the U.S. release date. So we we saw it a week after it had released.
Yeah.
And so to have that amount of people seeing it still on, like, a limited release window, an international film,
yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And we'll get into more of those numbers, because it's got some, we got some interesting numbers on this film, Hannah.
Yeah, I've heard some early things about the numbers, but we will see. That was very early on. That was like the opening weekend.
Yeah. Every time I thought I got to the end of recording the background for this film, I just kept getting more and more. But yeah, are you ready to get into some background, Hannah, about this film?
Sure.
Okay. So, The Boy That and the Heron, which I already said, release year 2023. Now, the time, 124 minutes. The rating, PG-13. We're back to PG-13. I don't think we've had a PG-13 rating since Princess Mononoke?
Maybe.
Let me look. I'm curious. Tales from Earthsea was PG-13, so.
Oh, okay.
Last time we had a PG-13 movie was Tales from Earthsea, but they're not far and few in between. They don't happen very often. So this film, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, was originally called How Do You Live? It is an animated fantasy film written and directed by Hayao Miyazaki. He's back out of retirement doing another feature film. He said he'd be done. He said he'd never come back.
You thought I was gone?
They literally closed down the whole studio, but they're back. They're here. The title of the film, How Do You Live, references the 1937 novel of the same name by Genzaburo Yoshino. The book itself does not share any story with the film. The name itself is where the inspiration is drawn from. I didn't write down the exact numbers because, again, the background just kept going, but apparently this novel is, like, on back order everywhere. Like, everyone's trying to buy this book, and they've had to reprint it, like, a ton of times. And it's now, I think it's sold, like, 1.8 million copies or something like that. For a book released in 1937, that's
right,
pretty crazy. Just from this movie alone, like, the call for it. So, Miyazaki, and I say this in quotations, retired in 2013. And he said he was done. And, you know, he was doing a little bit of work on a short film called Boro the Caterpillar, which ended up releasing in 2018. But when he was working on it, he was like, you know what? I think I'm going to come back out of retirement and make a new film. So in 2016, he started to storyboard and plan for a new animated feature film. And then it started to actually be in full production in 2017. And the goal was that Miyazaki wanted it to be released around the time of the Tokyo Summer 2020 Olympics that were being held in Japan. But they didn't have, like, a strict set deadline. Clearly, that didn't happen, as this film has now come out in 2023. Also, COVID had a big impact on the production schedule, as it did with a lot of things, so that's not surprising. I wrote down in parentheses, COVID oops, you know, a little oopsie. But it is one of the most expensive films produced in Japan and potentially the most expensive film. I couldn't find an actual number amount on how expensive this film was, but Toshio Suzuki, who's the longtime producer, he has claimed that it's the most expensive Japanese film. So I'm going to believe that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because something that they decided to do to finance this film is release their movies on streaming services, because previously they didn't do that. They hadn't released any films through streaming. You could only get them through, like, physical media. Miyazaki's apparently not on the apps. He's not on the smartphone. He's not online. He doesn't really know anything about streaming. So Suzuki had to apparently convince him that they should do this, that they should, you know, let people license their movies so then they can get money from it. And he was like, okay, sure. That's why they're on HBO Max. How we were able to watch them. So I guess thank you for doing that. Otherwise, we would have not been doing this. So thank you for needing to finance your film.
Yeah.
Just an anecdotal thing that I read in a different article, most of the information I gathered was through Wikipedia, one of our most trusted sources, but I was reading a different article a couple days ago that said that initially when Miyazaki was creating the idea for this film, he, because a lot of it is kind of somewhat autobiographical, like he draws inspiration from his own life into the film. But he initially wanted the story to be about two boys, basically mimicking his relationship with Isao Takahata, who was another longtime friend and collaborator and director through the studio. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2018 while this film was in production. So I think Miyazaki ended up changing the story because of that. Because the studio had closed, they had to ask a lot of their past collaborators and animators to come back because a lot of people had moved to different studios or had formed their own studios. Like, I think the director who did, I believe it was Arrietty and When Marnie Was There had created a new studio. I think we talked about that in the last episode. Joe Hisaishi has come back to do the soundtrack, a longtime Miyazaki collaborator. He's back doing his thing, you know, hanging out.
Yeah.
So this film was released in Japan in the July of this year, 2023. And one of the noteworthy things about this is that there was almost next to no promotion or advertising for this film. They released one poster that was a drawing with the title of the film, How Do You Live? I believe a release date. And that's it. They didn't release any cast information. They didn't release any plot synopsis. They didn't release any images. No trailers, nothing. One poster. And the reason this is interesting and why they decided to go this route is because they wanted to let the movie speak for itself, was said. And also, clearly, just from having done this and doing the background, is that the studio has a reputation for being the studio that it is. Hayao Miyazaki has a reputation for the director he is, and it already has an existing fan base that they would come see these films. So they just decided to go that route. Something that I read while we were doing it is that Miyazaki, when he was in his prime and he was younger, he could do roughly about 10 minutes of animation per month. So could work at a speed to do about 10 minutes a month. Now he does about a minute a month. So his part of the reason also for a longer work schedule is that his like timeline is slowed from what it used to be. And so he used to also oversee every frame of every movie he worked on, but he became more hands-off for this one. So he mainly focused more on the storyboarding, on the overall art direction, the writing, and the animation director Takeshi Honda took over like the animated process. So Miyazaki was a bit more hands-off, and part of that's due to his age, part of that's just due to him wanting to focusing on the story he wanted to tell. And this time, interestingly enough, because we talked about Disney a lot holding the distribution rights for the English release of this film, they don't have it anymore. Now it is distributed by G-Kids, is the new the new distributors of that English dub. And so the Studio Ghibli gave them permission to do whatever promotion they wanted to do. So for the actual English release, they released one teaser trailer that I didn't watch before the film. But if you wanted to see it, you could. But they also didn't do that much other promotion other than like announcing the voice cast, the English voice cast, and then having this trailer come out. It became the first animated film to open the Toronto International Film Festival. That was the first time in history that that had happened earlier this year. And it was also currently has been nominated for a Golden Globe for both Best Animated Feature and Best Score, pending as those Golden Globes have not yet happened for this year. I believe they're held in January, I think.
Maybe. I believe it's January. I think everything happens.
I know because of COVID, the actual schedule like shifted quite a bit because it used to be a lot more focused on the front half, like January, February.
January 7th.
Okay, so find out in a couple weeks. So you'll find out. Maybe they'll have won some Golden Globes by that point.
Yeah.
On its opening weekend, when it released in July, it had an opening of 1.83 billion yen, which is about $13.2 million. It was Studio Ghibli's biggest opening weekend since Howl's Moving Castle and even surpassed that. Currently, because it's still in the theaters. Or I don't know if this is also just because of international release, but currently it has grossed 8.64 billion yen as of like in December in Japan, which is really good. It was in the top 10 for, I think, 13 weeks in a row, is what I read. As of December 18th, it has made $54 million in the U.S. and Canada, so North American box office, and it has amassed $112.8 million worldwide. It is the first original anime film and Miyazaki film to be number one in the box office. This is both for U.S. and Canada. And it made $12.8 million its first weekend in the U.S., which is almost as good as the amount of money it made in its own opening weekend in Japan, which is crazy. Like, that says a lot. The fact that it almost made the amount of money it made, like, in its own home country where it's produced and targeted, like, for. So it's doing really well. Like, it's doing exceptionally well in the box office. I think this is the widest release the studio has had of an internationally for one of their films. And I think that plays a big part into it, as well as I know some people were talking about their marketing decisions, like how they didn't do Nixon. I mean, they basically did no promotion, yet people are seeing the film and seeing it in theaters and seeing it internationally. And I think that speaks a lot to the studio and to, like, Hayao Miyazaki, that it's doing that well.
Right.
Currently, it has a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic score of 92 out of 100, 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. I was having a hard time understanding some of the things they were saying about critical stuff, but apparently the critical reception initially was mixed, but shifted to become mostly positive and critically acclaimed. It seems like it's just positive. So I'm not sure where that, like, at what point it was mixed responses to shift to be mostly positive. And, you know, I don't know where that occurred. I was trying to figure out, like, what happened and when that shift occurred, because I was like, the movie's only been out 6 months. So it's, you know, would have, I guess, had to have shifted pretty quickly. But yeah, so it's very critically acclaimed. It's doing well review wise. Hello, everyone. Just a quick little update, as we recorded the initial episode in December of 2023. It's now February. We're getting ready to put the episode out soon. So we wanted to update with some new numbers for the film.
Yes. So, as of now, mid-February, Boy and the Heron currently has a 91% on Metacritic, a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd, a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which is essentially the exact same as what it was when we recorded, but it has changed slightly. So.
Right. And currently now has grossed $166 million in the box office.
Which is a lot.
Yes. It is a lot. Yeah. It also has won a Golden Globe for Best Anime Feature, which is the first Ghibli movie to be nominated, and first win for Hayao Miyazaki.
Which is crazy to me. Hannah and I were talking about this earlier, that I didn't realize they'd never been nominated for a Golden Globe. But no. I think generally the Golden Globes hasn't been very, hasn't had a lot of international recognition previously. It's a lot more U.S.-based than something like the Oscars is.
Well, it also started, the category started in 2007, so you think of some of the films that potentially could have been nominated were way before that.
True.
It also has been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature and a BAFTA Award for Best Animated Feature. Both are have not occurred yet, so we don't have any.
We don't know yet. Still will be a mystery.
Yes.
But yay, congrats on them winning a Golden Globe. That is fun. Good for them. I think they deserve it.
Yeah. And back to our regular episode.
Yeah, going back in time. Ooh.
Ooh.
Just another tidbit of fun that I thought might be interesting to note is that Christian Bale is a voice in this film. He was previously in Howl's Moving Castle playing the voice of Howl himself. The Japanese voice actor for Howl, who is, I spilled tea on his name, so I apologize if that's not his correct name, Takaya Kimura, who was the voice of Howl, also voices the same character that Christian Bale does in the English version of The Boy and the Heron. So they played the same character twice. So I thought that was kind of fun that that's they were like, they're like, clearly the character is supposed to be like the same type of, I guess, voice that they were like, hey, why don't you play this role again? Have you voiced the same role that you previously did? So I thought that was fun that, like, I don't think it happens very often that international versus a domestic, like, voice actor playing two roles, like, the same role as their counterpart. I don't think it happens very often. So I just thought that was a fun information to take in.
So that man and Christian Bale must be, like, twins.
It must be. Maybe they're both Batman. Who knows? So normally we have our summaries read from Max, which is HBO's streaming service. However, because this movie is currently in theaters and not streaming and probably won't be streaming for who knows how long, I have found a review on Google, or a summary on Google that I'm going to read now. Mahito, a young 12-year-old boy, struggles to settle in a new town after his mother's death. However, when a talking heron informs Mahito that his mother is still alive, he enters an abandoned tower in search of her, which takes him to another world.
I still don't know how I feel about this movie.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, because
I teared up.
I did too. A little bit, and but my problem is that I think it was good, but also I'm already having a hard time remembering some of the movie. So I'm like, is it forgettable? Like, that's where I'm having this.
Yeah.
This, because I didn't write notes in the theater and I didn't write notes that night because I just wanted to, like, process it. And by, like, the next day or the day after when I went to write notes, I was like, I don't remember a lot of the scenes. So I don't know. I definitely felt something.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because as we've been going through the studio, a lot of the earlier films that I saw as a child, revisiting as an adult and a second watch through, I think was really nice, and like being able to look at it in a different way. And I really think this film would really benefit me to have a second watch through of it. Mm-hmm. But it just came out. So I'm like, I feel like this movie could really change, like my perception of this movie could really change on a second watch through. Because I think there were a lot of things that stood out to me as really, really interesting. Like, I really liked some of the animation choices. Like, there's a kind of an ongoing theme of, like, Mahito's the main character, has lost his mother in a fire. And the way they, like, animate, like, the fire and, like, shadowy figures, like, because he dreams about, he has nightmares about that. The opening scene is, like, him running through a crowd. And, like, some of the animation choices I thought were really interesting and kind of different from what we had seen previously, at least from Miyazaki himself. I felt like a lot of elements came from his previous films. Like, I thought it brought together, like, a lot of things that we had kind of seen. And, like, things from Spirited Away, things from Howl's Moving Castle, things from, like, My Neighbor Totoro.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Like, I feel like the problem for me is that I don't really know how I feel about it. I don't feel negatively. Mm-mm. I don't feel like, wow. Like, it definitely, like, left an impact. And I thought it was a well-done movie. But I feel like maybe, I think I know what my issue is that this movie's focus is really not on plot. Like, the plot is not, like, a straightforward, like, a straightforward story. I feel like it's a lot more about the journey, like, what, I don't know, themes or, like, what messages you can draw from that. Because it really feels, like, very personal. I didn't include it in the background because I didn't think it was necessarily, like, part of it, but people have said, like, it's, you know, Miyazaki, we talked about with My Neighbor Totoro, like, his mother was sick a lot when he was younger, so, like, this, having a death of a mother young, like, having this, like emotional tie to that, plus this idea that like he's aging himself, so like creating a better world for like a future generation is something right. that is a theme that has come up in his films before. Some of the character tropes I feel like were similar to characters that we've seen before, which wasn't not a bad thing, but like creativity choices with like the birds being like a focus I thought was interesting. But yeah, I guess it's hard. It's hard to talk about a film that I don't know necessarily. Like, I still don't really have like a good. I don't really know what I watched. In a way, it's hard to explain.
Because there's parts of the plot that I wouldn't say they're holes, but there's feels like there was a couple things missing.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I guess you're right. I guess it's this journey about like grief and PTSD and like how you work through that. And we've seen a lot of Ghibli films where it's like someone working through like a death or like you know, younger kids and like they either don't have parents or parents are sick, stuff like that. And I don't know, I will say like it was so nice to go from,
oh,
because the last movie we had watched was Earwig
and the Witch.
When the movie started, I was like, oh, that's such like a breath of fresh air, because I didn't actually know that Joe Hisaishi was doing the music, but as soon as it started playing, I was like, oh, that must be him. And so it was refreshing to kind of get back to the things about Studio Ghibli that I like, the elements that I enjoy. I don't know. I think it's nice to like get a character who gets like the main focus. Like, it did feel like a character study mm-hmm. and like a progression of one character, and had a lot of interactions with different people. I almost felt like there were like too many side characters.
There were a lot of like, side characters,
like,
yeah.
Like, I felt like they were trying to maybe do too much. Like, it just felt like maybe if you had one or two less side characters, it would have been better, because it got a little bit, not even confusing, but it just felt like a little bit rushed through some of the characters.
Yeah.
I
think that's fair.
And so, yeah, I think there was some, like, issues with the plot. There was maybe a couple issues with, like, the writing, but I think the story itself was pretty good. Obviously, I think the animation was good and the music soundtrack was good. But yeah, I think I'm kind of with you. I don't really know how to feel about it, and I also don't know how I'm going to rank it.
Yeah, that's what I'm most got to figure out, is where I'm going to rank it. Two things I wanted to note. One is I completely agree with you when comparing this to the last film we had to watch, which is Earwig and the Witch, which breath of fresh air. And it was something that I noticed when I was watching it, is there's a scene where they're eating and I was like, I like felt a swell where I'm like, the food, it looks so good. Because that was something we talked about in the last film, is that it was like, it looked so bad. Like, food looked...
Because Ghibli's done food well so
it's so like, often. Oh, we're back. We're back at it. That food looks delicious. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is I didn't write this quote down and I wanted to find it because I thought that it was interesting, is they held a preview screening for this film in February. And at the end credits, a message from Miyazaki was read out saying, quote, "Perhaps you didn't understand it. I myself don't understand it." So I feel like it's pretty clear to me that he wasn't necessarily intending to write like a traditional story.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very much based out of emotion and like feeling and understanding, which is totally fine. But it makes it, I feel like that is kind of maybe harder for me to figure out how I feel about it, because I got to kind of like grasp like what meaning does it bring to me, I guess, is the right, maybe the way I would phrase that.
Yeah, and I guess it's, like, true to life that it a lot of times it's hard to understand and it doesn't always make sense. And I get that. It's also, like, I think it's one of those films where everyone can kind of find some way to interpret it differently, and everyone can kind of find some aspect of it to relate to, which I think Studio Ghibli has always kind of done that well. But yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, overall, like, I enjoyed it. I teared up at the end.
I felt positively about the experience.
Yeah.
There's a part where they gut this large fish, and Hannah had one of the most visceral reactions I've ever heard from her at a movie theater. There's this pirate, I can't remember her name, but she's like a sailor pirate. I really liked her character. She was probably one of my favorite, yeah. She's probably my favorite side character in the film. What a surprise. Mm-hmm. A fun female character.
Strong female
character. You know, we love those. He loves those. We're a big fan of that. Still holds up in this movie. And she's gutting this fish. And so Mahito, she's like, here, you do it. And he goes to stab and just gets sprayed with blood. And Hannah, I just hear Hannah go, ugh!
It was so gross.
I couldn't stop laughing.
Very gross.
It was so funny. I have to imagine that you reacting is like how I reacted to Bao, like where I just like gasped, yeah. Where I was like,
yeah, I forgot about how weird that was.
That's what it made me think of.
No one else in the theater like was concerned. Me and Alyssa were just like, what is happening?
What is happening? But so that was really fun. You should know by now listening to us that we go through everything. We're going to do spoilers. We're going to talk about it all.
Yeah.
During the film, I was trying to figure out what the relationship between him and his stepmother was in relation to, like, his family, because it's, like, your bloodline. You're part of this bloodline of this family who has access to this, like, other world through this tower that's on their family property. And I kept being, like, is his stepmom his aunt? I just, like, was trying to figure that out. And then at the very end of the movie, they were like, it came to be that, like, yes, that his new stepmom is his mother's younger sister. And I was just, like, trying to piece that together. I was like, what is happening? And I was like, yeah. I wondered if it was maybe supposed to be somewhat ambiguous. Like, you weren't necessarily supposed to know that until the end of the film. I wasn't really sure, though.
Yeah, I don't know, because I guessed that when they first met her.
Yeah. So I wasn't sure. I was like, is it supposed to be ambiguous? Am I supposed to know that? And I just missed, like, the cue or something.
Yeah, I'm not
sure. I wasn't exactly sure. The soundtrack was good, but I found it interesting that I felt like a lot more moments of silence in this film than maybe in some of his previous films, which I thought worked in a lot of cases. Like, I thought a lot of the moments where they were pretty soft and silent, like, worked pretty well. And I definitely noticed, going back to the ties to his previous films, when there's, like, this gateway to this, I don't know, the grand uncle's, like, little place where he's stacking blocks, you know, he's building Legos, where it looks like the train station from Spirited Away. Like, when her Chihiro and her family walk into the, like, that entrance and into the train station, that entryway looked exactly like that one. And I was like, oh, that's definitely got to be a callback to Spirited Away. Like, that was, like, I caught onto that right away. And I'm like, interesting. Interesting choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to talk about Hannah. What the fuck is Robert Pattinson doing? How did he pull that voice out of himself?
I knew he was in the voice cast, and then I was like, who is he?
Because I knew he was in the voice cast, and I knew Willem Dafoe was in the voice cast. And I didn't know who was voicing who. I just had saw some of the names, and I'm like, cool. I thought the heron, this bird, was Willem Dafoe the whole fucking movie. Because it sounded like him. Like, it sounded like Green Goblin. And then I kept being like, oh, I wonder which bird is the Robert Pattinson bird. I'm like, maybe it's this one parakeet. Like, it maybe could be him. And he's maybe got, like, a little bit of British thing going on. Imagine my surprise. We get to the end of the film. We get to the credits. The gray heron, Robert Pattinson. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, how did he do that?
I mean, he did Batman, so who's to say he can't do anything?
He sounds like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, get this man voice acting. Like, he needs to do more. This is his first voice acting role ever.
Yeah.
And apparently he had this voice already. Like, when he went to audition, he recorded that voice on his phone and was like, oh, I kind of, like, have an idea of what voice I want to do. Can I play it for you? And they were like, oh, yeah, that's the voice. That's what we want. Like, sure, you can have it. Like, you know?
I feel like he'll end up being in a bunch of animated stuff.
Probably.
Now. This was his introduction.
When they were trying to get the voice cast, this is also, I was reading a different article. They kind of have a running list of, like, actors that have expressed interest in working with the studio. Like, clearly, Mark Hamill has worked with the studio. Christian Bale has. So, like, some of the actors in this film had already worked with them previously. But apparently they have, like, people, agents have been like, hey, if anything comes up, my client would be interested. So they kind of have a, I think Robert Pattinson was one of those people who was, like, expressed interest in being in the film. So,
yeah,
I thought that was very interesting. But, we watched in English, if that wasn't clear, in the theater. There were no subtitles, which that also was upsetting to me, to not have access to subtitles, which is fine. It's fine. Yeah. I'll make do.
They did, just for, like, note the people who don't know, they do offer the subbed and the dubbed version.
They do have the option to see, at least in the theater we went to, that you could have seen it in Japanese, like,
which with subtitles. Which I thought was kind of cool. Because I kind of assumed they would only do the English dubbed version for the theater release, and then when they did on HBO, or sorry, on Max.
Yeah, offer both.
They would offer both, but it was cool to see that they offered the subbed version.
I agree.
It was very, I don't know if it was just me, but it was very quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I had a hard time hearing some of it, and I don't know if that was just the theater not having the volume loud enough, because I was like, at the beginning, I was like, I can't hear.
Yeah, I think it was probably more the theater than the film itself would be my guess, but...
But yeah, so I thought that was interesting.
I feel like I'm interested in why, for an international release, they decided to change the name to The Boy and the Heron. Because I don't really feel like the heron is a main character. Like, I think from that title, I would expect that it's like the boy and a heron together on this journey. But more, the heron's just kind of a in-and-out character. Like, they do things, some things together, and he is like a... You know, an important side character, but I was like, I don't really feel like the story is necessarily focused on the boy and the heron. I kind of like How Do You Live better, I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have anything else if you want to do favorites.
Yeah, I don't think I had anything specific.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is hard, because my favorite character, I think, was Mahito.
I agree.
But I really liked the woman pirate.
I think her name was, let me look up her name, actually. Kiriko. Kiriko.
Kiriko.
Kiriko. I'm not sure what her, like, old...
Right.
She was old and maid or something. She was, like, a maid.
Yes. I really liked her and Mahito's, like, interactions.
That was my favorite part of the story, was them together.
Yeah, I think they had really good back and forth and stuff, and you could tell they, like, cared about each other. They just, like, didn't outwardly show it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I picked him just because this is kind of a movie that's, like, a character study on him, and I think it's hard to not pick those characters in that instance.
Yeah.
Just because you kind of get this whole slew of everything he's going through and his emotions and how he processes everything. So, I thought he was a pretty... well done, main character.
I agree. I picked him as well. And I agree, because it is, like, kind of an autobiographical study. I feel like Miyazaki did almost of himself in a fantasy world, kind of. Or he drew a lot of inspiration from his own life. So it's hard to not pick the focal character in that case.
Right.
I agree. I did really like Kiriko, the pirate ship lady. As well. She's probably my second favorite character. Definitely my favorite side character from the movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like I liked that Mahito was, like, was a flawed character. One, he's 12, and he's dealing with the grief of his mother's death, plus his dad remarrying his aunt, who he doesn't know very well, and has to move. Right. And that's during war. So it's, I think it's implied to be during, like, World War II is when the time frame of this movie takes place. So... it's interesting to see, like, his growth and, like, his journey throughout the story and, like, processing grief and trauma and, you know, PTSD and all of that. And I like what struggles he goes through and, like, how he is able to, like, overcome and, I guess, become himself, I guess, is maybe the right way to phrase that.
Yeah.
By the end of the film.
Okay. So I did not have a favorite line, mostly just because I couldn't remember.
I couldn't remember any lines either. I also didn't have a favorite line either, no.
Okay. Favorite scene. This one's hard because there were a couple scenes that really, like, stuck in my mind. But I think if we're talking about just specific scene, I really actually liked the scene with can't remember if it was like towards the beginning or if it was in the middle. It's like when he's, oh, when he falls asleep and he's having like flashbacks, dreams of his mom. Mm-hmm. And not only did I really like the animation style they did, but I just thought it was like a really like profound thing. And it really like allowed the viewer, I think, to try and understand how the character's feeling and kind of what he went through as like a child, essentially.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I just really liked that, how they did that and how they showed that like emotion through a scene.
It really invoked the that scene from The Tale of Princess Kyuga. Mm-hmm. Where she's, like, running, and then the animation becomes, like, very kind of almost different. Like, I feel like this had a similar vibe. Not in the same way, but I felt like it did a really good job of, like, displaying emotion through animation. Because I felt like it was became very wispy and, like, shadowy. Like, the color kind of changed. The way the fire looked. It was very well done. I agree. I was trying to decide if I wanted that to be my favorite Ghibli moment or if I wanted that to be my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Because they kind of felt like it overlapped a bit there. Agreed. So I think I ended up, let me check. I think, yeah, I put that as my favorite scene as well. Because I knew I was going back and forth. So, yeah, I agree the same reasons that you do. I thought it was a really impactful scene. And, like, I feel like, especially seeing something in the theater and seeing it for the first time, stuff that sticks with you is, like, the things that, like, are impactful. So that one is a scene, like, I can picture that. And also, I feel like it was also – feels a little different to see it on a big screen, too.
Yeah.
Because that kind of made it more interesting because, I mean, we've been watching it just at home. So
it
makes it maybe feel a little special as well.
Yeah. So for Ghibli moment – there was a part where the music started coming in, and I can't remember, like, I tried to look up what the song was, but I couldn't, like, I didn't know.
There
what
were 36 songs in the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's hard to find the song. And also, I pulled up a list, and I was like, I don't know which one's which. But there was a part towards the end when they were talking about, like, if you stay in his great grand uncle.
Oh yeah, like the created world.
Right. They were kind of discussing, like, if you stay and, like, create your own world, that you can make, like, the best of whatever. Mm-hmm. He was saying, like, you can make it the best possible world, or, like, if you leave and go back. And there was, like, a part where, like, this music came in, and it was just, like, I don't know, that created world, like, the final couple scenes where it was, like, the blocks and all that, like, that whole part, like, I really thought that I liked the animation of that, and I also kind of liked the, it kind of gave me vibes of, like, Harry Potter and Dumbledore in that white room, subway station kind of thing that they did one of the last movies.
I agree. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. And, I don't know. Because I was also going to do the Ghibli scene as the one I just did, but there were so many of the scenes that you could have said Ghibli moments because they were so, like, entwined. But yeah, I just liked how they did that aspect and how he was like, oh, he made a comment about, I can't remember what it was, but that he basically knew that the great uncle was, like, lying or, like, had some sort of bad intention, stuff like that. So I just liked that, and I liked how there was kind of, like, this parallel I could see to another movie. And I don't know, just, it's not even so much about the scene, but, like, how the way that it made me feel.
Yeah.
The emotion I got.
Yeah,
the emotion behind
it.
Yeah. Because around that moment, around that time is when I, like, started to tear up a little bit.
Yeah.
Not right then, but, like, soon after. So, yeah, I like that little build-up scene. Yeah.
I agree. I thought that scene was really good. It's not the one I ended up picking, but I know what music you're talking about with that scene.
Yeah.
And it also, I feel like a lot of the music, not that it's a detriment, but I feel like a lot of it kind of sounds pretty similar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Howl's Moving Castle, where they kind of use the same theme in slightly different ways throughout the film. It kind of felt more like that style than some of the other more grandiose, like, you know, Princess Mononoke type feels. Right. That was something I kind of brought up earlier, but I forgot to bring it up again, is that some people were saying that I don't know if Miyazaki himself said it or if people are reading into that people saw, like, Takahata as that character, as this, like, family member who has passed and is, like, to the next generation or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. But the scene that I ended up picking is Kiriko basically picks him up they go on a ship, they catch a fish, and then they're sailing into this, like, town mm-hmm. harbor, and it's, like, this really cool-looking, like, ship house, like, very, very visual styled that I was like, oh, I'm in. I'm, like, I'm into this style, this visual. And there was, like, kind of these, like, souls almost that were following them, and there was music kind of playing during that scene. And I thought that felt like very, all the scenes that I tend to like are very much like that, because it felt like the sixth station from like Spirited Away, when they're just traveling and it's just kind of like seeing what's happening in the background and just kind of following them mm-hmm. Without really a lot of words. And so that felt really good to me, like that scene. And then also the cute little puffballs showed up, and I was like, oh, look at those little puffballs. I want one of those. They were so cute.
They were so cute.
Looked like little, what are those, squishmallows or whatever they're called?
They looked like a mixture of Boo and Toad.
Yeah, they were very cute.
Oh, they were so cute.
Warawara is what they're called. The Warawara. They were very cute. So I was like, oh, this is like Totoro. They're so cute. Like the little dust bunnies from, from like Spirited Away and stuff, so... But there were several scenes that I like felt were pretty powerful and strong and like invoked a lot of emotion. And I think that's probably what my biggest takeaway is from having seen this, is that I don't know cohesively as a story if it's like my favorite, but I feel mm-hmm. like it does really well in like emotional and like bringing out some sort of like feeling or I don't know what the other word I'm looking for is. Maybe how you decide to interpret it maybe is the way that I would describe that.
I feel like it invoked a lot of emotions and like ability to interpret scenes how you want to and stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel like wherever I rank it, I'm going to have to rewatch it, and then that might change how I feel about it, because I don't know where to put it. I don't know where to put it, yeah. Hannah. I don't know. Yeah,
that's fair.
But yeah, we did it. We're done. We watched our final film. And now, Hannah, we have the monstrous task of ranking every single film, which is 23, 24 now. It's 24 total. So we will be back next episode, and we'll be ranking. And it will be the same as our Pixar, where we just have one full episode of ranking, because it's going to take that long.
Yep.
In addition to that, we're going to have a nice little special guest come join us for the ranking.
A new special guest.
Not a returning guest, a new guest. And because I wanted to spare her for not having to do all of the work that we've had to do with all these episodes, I said, hey, do you want to just come to rank? And she said, sounds good. A year and a half ago when we were going to do this. So she has agreed to come for real now in the present day. So look forward to that. We have social media. r3podcast mm-hmm. @gmail.com is our Gmail account. Let us know if you have any questions, comments, concerns. We have an Instagram account. We have a letterbox that I am, over the holiday break, going to be slowly updating and adding some lists and things, so that'll be a bit more interactive if you're into letterbox. Do you have anything else?
No, just stay classy.
Yeah. Go fuck yourselves, San Diego.
Go fuck yourself, Cash.
At home. We'll see you next time. Bye.
I'm sorry, Cash. I didn't mean that.
We would like to thank Joseph McDade for our intro music. He provides free music available for all kinds of creative use. The song that we used is called Sunrise Expedition, and you can find it and his other music on his website, josephmcdade.com. If you would like to reach us, you can email us at r3podcasts@gmail.com. That's r3podcasts@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Instagram by searching Research Rank Repeat.
I wrote my notes after my actual thoughts on the film that I recorded. So I went to look and I just saw the word fish. And I'm like, that's not the start of my notes. So I got confused. Oh, hi, Carl. Look at the cute boy. Pew, 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 pew.